Only once in my life have I met a man with leprosy. And that's surprising if you know my family history. I had an uncle who was a leprosy surgeon, and he devoted the best years of his life to working in a remote corner of India, devising operations which would reverse the worst ravages of the disease, and working out ways of helping his patients to return to a normal life. Uncle Paul committed his life to doing that, and I knew his story very well, and I admired him. In fact, he was probably more like Jesus than anyone I have ever known. I knew a little bit about leprosy, how it's not what most people think. It doesn't rot the flesh, that's a myth. It's a disease of the nerves that starts at the extremities where the body temperature is lowest and kills feeling and sensation, so that when fingers and toes and face get cut and bruised and burnt, you simply can't feel what is happening. I knew the stories about how leprosy patients are outcast and rejected by their families and in their villages. The fear of infection and the horrible deformities of the disease forcing people out and away from their homes and creating barriers it is almost impossible to overcome, even when the disease has run its course and they try to return home. I knew too what my uncle wrote in one of his books. Of all the gifts we can give a leprosy patient, the one he values most is the gift of being handled and touched. We don't shrink from him. We love him with our skin, by touch, because no one else will touch the outcast. I knew all this, but I'd never met anyone with leprosy until about 3 years ago when I was visiting Tibet. That's when the stories came to life. I was going to visit one of the workers sent out by this church, and on the way I had to spend a few days on my own in Lhasa, the capital city. There was a beggar on the streets, and as I looked at him, it was painfully obvious why he was there. This man had leprosy, an advanced case, and this was how he survived. Tibetan, elderly I think, but it was very hard to be sure. His face was so stricken and wasted, I couldn't really guess his age. And there wasn't a great deal I could do for him. I knew not a soul in the whole city, and I couldn't speak his language. I did speak to him, I did pray for him, and I did put money in his bowl. But I knew there was something very simple I needed to do. I grasped what remained of his two hands in mine and looked him full in the face, the most awful face I have ever seen. As I talked to him and tried to imagine the depth of his suffering, that was it. Not much, really, but at least I had given him what I can almost guarantee no one else ever did, a caring touch for the outcast. And Jesus came to this earth to bring in the outcast. That's what this little story is about. A couple of weeks ago, we looked at the story just before this one, where Jesus is in the town of Capernaum, and the whole populace comes to him with everyone who is sick or demon-possessed, and he heals every single one. And then early next morning, his disciples wake up in the half-light of the house and they find Jesus gone. And they track him down somehow, praying in some lonely spots. And Simon Peter asks him, in effect, "What are you doing out here when the crowds are there looking for you? Come back and meet your public." And Jesus responds, "Yes, let's go somewhere else. I need to go to the other towns and villages and preach there. That is why I have come." So now that's what we find him doing, touring the area of Galilee, going from place to place, preaching in the synagogues, driving out demons. And in one of those places, a man with leprosy comes up and begs him on his knees, "If you are willing, you can make me clean." Now, leprosy in the Bible does not mean exactly the same as it does today. It's probable that our leprosy, Hansen's disease as it's also known, actually spread into the land of Israel from the east a few centuries before the time of Christ. But in those days they did not have the benefit of precise medical terminology. And the expression leprosy covered a number of different conditions, including what we call leprosy, but also including other conditions with visible effects on the skin and in the flesh. And unlike the leprosy we know, some of these conditions would have been highly contagious. But the whole range of infectious skin diseases were covered in the Jewish law by very detailed regulations. The original laws are set out in the book of Leviticus, chapters 13 and 14. Leprosy created two problems. The first is the obvious one. It was a disease that disfigured you, damaged your body, and made people terrified of you. The kind of fear that today accompanies AIDS. The second problem is that because of the physical effects on the body, leprosy also made you ritually unclean. To be unclean meant that you were excluded from God's people. There was a barrier between you and God. You could not go to worship. You could not share in the sacrifices. You were effectively cut out. If you did recover, only the priests could declare that you were clean once more. And there were detailed rules for that as well, including sacrifices that had to be offered. All of which meant that life for the leprosy sufferer was very grim indeed. Although in theory they were allowed to live anywhere except inside a walled city, in practice they lived away from everyday society, quite literally out of touch. To make matters even worse, the religious authorities, in typical style, had added to the original rules a whole tranche of additional legislation about exactly how clean people could be made unclean. See if you can get your head around this one. This is a rabbinical legislation from the time of Christ. If an unclean man stands under a tree and a clean man passes by, the latter becomes unclean. If a clean man stands under a tree and an unclean man passes by, the former remains clean. If the latter stands still, the former becomes unclean. Got that? All with the effect of making normal people more wary than ever about contact with the disease. And this was one set of regulations the people of Israel observed very strictly. They may have missed others, but they certainly didn't miss this one. There were no exceptions. Even Uzziah, one of the greatest of their kings, when he was struck with leprosy, was shut away in a house by himself for the rest of his life. A king, but an outcast. The rabbis believed that it was as difficult to cleanse a leprosy sufferer as it was to raise the dead, which was not exactly encouraging. The Old Testament records only two cases of leprosy being healed, both by divine intervention. One was Miriam, the sister of Moses, and the other was Naaman, the Syrian general. So now here comes this man, carrying all that weight of exclusion on his shoulders. Think what it means. Think how he feels. This man comes to Jesus and pleads with him for healing. Knowing the hopelessness of his situation, the scale of the barriers which divide him from his fellow man, we can understand why he goes down on his knees. He's clearly heard about Jesus. Perhaps from a distance he has watched him in action as others have come to him for healing. Perhaps he's looked on from some hiding place and seen how the demons have been driven out. In any case, he seems to have no doubts. You can make me clean. The only question in his mind is Jesus willing to? And Jesus at once speaks and acts. Verse 41, filled with compassion, Jesus reached out his hands and touched the man. I am willing, he said, be clean. Moved with deep compassion for the suffering of this man, he stretches out his hand and, breaking all those barriers, he touches him. By that action, the rules say Jesus himself becomes ritually unclean. By the touch that the man has not felt, perhaps for many years, be clean. Immediately the leprosy left him and he was cured. Even there, actually, the original word is not cured, but made clean. So what has happened? A diseased man has been healed. Healing that is immediate and 100% successful. But more than that, the barriers have been broken down. And the outcast has been brought back in. He's been restored. And that's what Jesus does. So now Jesus sends him off to the priest. Verse 44, see that you don't tell this to anyone, but go, show yourself to the priest and offer the sacrifices that Moses commanded for your cleansing as a testimony to them. That's what the law says. The priest is the only one who's qualified to check you over and declare that you are clean. The custom is, in fact, you have to visit the local priest and then go on to Jerusalem and do the sacrifices under the authorities there. And there are special ceremonies to perform, partly to act out your freedom and partly to give thanks to God. And you will be certified free of disease and fit to rejoin society again. And what a tremendous moment of elation that would be. At last, a normal life again, back to the family, back to work, back to self-respect. That's what this man can now look forward to. Sounds like such a happy ending. Wonderful story. The ravages of disease are undone in a moment. The pain of separation is reversed. He's back on the inside of society. And yet there is a tragic twist to this story, and it's vital that we see it. Remember back to last time, those amazing scenes at Capernaum with that crowd being healed and set free. How Simon Peter wants Jesus to go back there and pick up with that expectant throng. And Jesus says, no, he has come to preach the kingdom. He has come to challenge people to make their personal response to him. Not just to flock to him for healing, but to accept him as king. And this man with his leprosy, just like so many others, has missed the point. That's the tragedy. He comes to the healer. He gets healed. He's thrilled with it. He's overjoyed. But even so, he's missed the point. How do we know? Verse 43 tells us, Jesus sent him away at once with a strong warning. See that you don't tell this to anyone. And the word for strong warning is actually very strong. Jesus really thumps the table here. You are absolutely not to go spreading this around. Why? Because this man has seen only the healer and not the king. He's to tell only the priests. They, as the religious professionals, should at least be able to recognize the evidence of their eyes and see what it means. If, as they believe, it's as hard to heal someone from leprosy as it is to raise the dead, then surely they will see that God must be in this. And if they don't, well, what Jesus probably means is that it will be evidence against them that they refuse to recognize the true messenger of God. But what does the man do? Well, we don't know if he makes it as far as the priests, though he will have to in the end. But we do know that he does the exact opposite of what Jesus instructs him. He goes and tells everybody he can find. And does he tell them that God's promised kingdom has arrived and that he's met the king? No. He tells them, hey guys, there's a healer out there. Look what he's done to me. The wrong message. If nothing else, the fact that he directly disobeys Jesus' clear instructions proves that he hasn't recognized him as the king. And the outcome is that he succeeds in derailing Jesus' whole strategy. As a result, Jesus could no longer enter a town openly, but stayed outside in lonely places. But here's the truth. Although the man goes away healed and he can now live normally for the rest of his life, he misses the main point. Jesus did not come to give people normal life. He came to give people eternal life. And this is what the healing points to. As we said before, they are signposts. And signposts are not there to be admired, however smart or even wonderful they look. They are there to be followed. And here is one very clear signpost. For a start, Jesus' actions show that the ceremonial rules about clean and unclean and touching and not touching are finished with. He's not concerned to obey those rules anymore. But far more than that, what's been done here? As Jesus touches the man, he takes on his uncleanness so that the man can be made clean. So that the barrier which cuts out the outcast is broken down. In a sense, Jesus becomes the outcast so that the outcast can be brought home. And Jesus has come into the world to do just that on a grand scale. Leprosy was a terrible curse. It ruined normal life. It destroyed relationships. It brought pain and ugliness into human life. Jesus healed people from it. Such was his compassion. But even as wonderful as that was, it points ahead to the healing of a far greater curse. The curse of sin, which just like leprosy, but far more, ruins normal life. Destroys relationships and brings pain and ugliness into our lives. Jesus came to provide cleanness from sin, the disease, the curse that affects us all. Not just to clear up a few diseases for a couple of years and then disappear from the scene, but to provide a far, far bigger cleanup operation. One that will be permanent. One that will extend throughout the world, not just to a few square miles in Palestine. Because we have all broken God's law. That law places us under a curse. All of us, rightly so, because we are all rebels against our Creator. And under the curse, we are all outcasts, cut off from God by the barrier of sin. So how can that curse be lifted? The Bible puts it like this. Christ redeemed us from the curse of the law by becoming a curse for us. When Jesus the King went to the cross, when he was crucified and died, he took on himself our curse. He became the curse for us, dying under the weight of it, paying the penalty due for our sin. Bringing in the outcast. And now, when he touches our lives, he makes us clean. The curse is gone. Life can begin anew. Not just a normal life regained to live a few more years and then die, like this man knew when he was healed, but far more, eternal life. This is what the kingdom of God is about. The kingdom Jesus came proclaiming is the place where the curse has been lifted. The place where there is real life again. Where outcasts have been brought in. Maybe you are feeling like an outcast right now. And perhaps it was a struggle for you to come into church this morning. There is something in your life. Something you have done, or that someone has done to you, that stands like a huge, impossible, impenetrable barrier between you and God. Or so it seems. It could be something you're deeply ashamed of, and the regrets are poisoning your heart. It might be a physical condition that you suffer, or even the way that you look. Could be the effect of someone abusing or hurting you deeply over many years. And there's a guilt that doesn't even belong to you hanging round your neck. And Christian or not, you feel like an outcast today. Plenty of people do. Those experiences are real, and no one can simply wave them away, pretend they're not there. But can I say it like this? However much you feel weighed down this morning by the baggage of your past, by things that you are carrying at this moment that maybe no one else knows about but you, however heavy the load you are carrying, it is not too much for Jesus to deal with. And it is never impossible for you to come back to God. You might doubt that. And if you're feeling weighed down this morning, to be honest, you probably do doubt it. But look at the cross. See the place where Jesus became the curse and took on a heavier weight than we can imagine, even at our very lowest, because he went far lower, broken and crushed by the load of every evil known to man. And he did that to bring in the outcasts, to bring in the people who were far away. He did that because he loves you. Now, where do you stand with Jesus today? A man with leprosy came to ask him for healing. He was healed. The curse was lifted. He got back his normal life. He went away and lived it, and then he died. But as far as we can tell, he missed out on the king. He missed out on the chance to have the biggest curse lifted. And what about you? You see, there is really only one thing that can make you an outcast from God. However we may feel, it's not bad experiences. It's not illness or worry or even the darkness of depression. The one thing that can keep you an outcast from God is exactly the same disease that we all start out with: our sin. Have you been to the cross? Have you seen Jesus made into a curse for you so that you can be clean? And if you have, then there is nothing, nothing at all that can ever separate you from his love. The love that will hold you and sustain you in the worst of days. "I am willing," he said, "be clean."